From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of January 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will join us to look at the cash grain market, speaking of which, we'll talk again about basis today, this time with Scott Irwin, ag economist from the U of I. And hey, don't forget that as we close out our program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day lower. The nearby contract and the soft red winter wheat down 2.5 cents at 6.44¾. The May at 6.58¾, down 3 for the day. And July wheat at $6.71¼, finished 3.5 cents lower. The hard red at 7.13¾, down 2.5 cents. From the corn pit, nearby March contract, a dime lower today, 6.31¾. The May at 6.37¾. It finished down 9¾ in July at 6.41¼, down 9¾ as well. September corn, $5.87¼, down 6¾. December, the new crop, 5.64¾, down 6¼. And the March contract at 5.77¼, 5¾ lower. March soybeans on the day, 11.85¼, 33¾ cents lower. The May futures at 11.95¼, down 33¼. And July contract at $12.05, down 33¼. August futures, 12.04, 32¼ lower. November at 11.94½, down 27¾. Bean meal finished the March contract at 3.1270. That was down $9.50, and bean oil at 50.25, down 1.34 for the day. Live cattle futures finished the Febs at 123.92½, 77½ lower. April at 127.75 for the live cattle, down 70. March futures at 154.35, down 25. The April at 156.60, down 22½ cents. And February lean hogs today at $86.45, down 22½. The April at $87.15 for 100 pounds, down 22½ cents as well. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures trading at $98.84 a barrel, down 72 cents. Ethanol at 2.16¾, 3 cents lower. Natural gas at 2.70½. That's $2.70½, that is, down 5 1/10 cents. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.05, down 1 4/10 cents. Gold futures on the day, $1,731, down $1.20. And the dollar at 79.17, that's up 0.27. The CRB index at 313.91, down 3.55 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says we'll have mostly sunny skies, a high of 54 degrees, south-southwest winds at 18 miles an hour, the gust to 29. And then tonight, partly cloudy skies, a low of 40, with a south-southwest wind between 14 and 18, gusting all the way to 26. On Tuesday, increasing clouds, a high of 58. It'll be breezy tomorrow. Southwest wind at 14 to 20, gusting to 30 on Tuesday night. 50% chance of rain, mostly cloudy, a low of 41 degrees, with a west wind again at 7 to 14. On Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 48. Wednesday night, cloudy and 33. Thursday, sunny and 46. Thursday night, partly cloudy, a low of 33. And Friday, partly sunny skies, a high of 45 degrees. Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 30. Saturday, a chance of snow, mostly cloudy, the high near 38. Saturday night, cloudy and a low of 26. And by the time we get to Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 36 degrees. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the closing market report on a Monday afternoon. Time to check the futures markets. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Things turned ugly over the weekend, but I suspect, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, much of that had to do with Europe and Greece.
Yeah, we feel it was a combination of things that came together. Definitely the headline news of Greece and so forth. Put this sort of the fear on investment money flowing into the marketplace. We got to remember it's going to be a long-term process to get that straightened out. So it's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. And unfortunately, you know, the negative spin kept the world economy outlook in check and generated some selling. But also, too, we saw a little bit of concern out of China, no big buying coming to the marketplace here, a little question mark on some of the economic news, and it also gave the sellers a chance to sort of take charge today. Then lastly, the South American forecast, a little bit more favorable. So when you combine all that, that gave the bears the advantage today, some selling interest, funds kicked in on the sell side, and looking at today, tomorrow, end of the month, generated sort of a liquidation mode. They sold funds, that is, sold 11,000 corn, 10,000 beans, 2,000 wheat. But, you know, this comes at the gains of 81 cents of the beans last week from the low to the high here. Corn gained over 53 cents and the wheat market over 68 cents. So we're kind of in a position here to trade the fundamental news here for a little bit to give the market reason to sort of correct and regroup here.
When you look at the basis and cash market, it's been really hot for corn. Are there good reasons for it to remain that way?
We feel so. We feel producers pretty well sold up. We feel a lot of grains moved off the farm. It's moved into some stronger hands, for say. The demand's still underneath the marketplace. You know, some of these ethanol guys are struggling to get some corn, some tremendous premiums in some areas. We heard one case where a producer was short 150 bushels, and they held him to the contract. They wanted the 150 bushels. There was no buying it out or anything. He had to go out and find 150 bushels to fulfill that contract. So sort of tells us there's a urgency or need there to get some coverage on, and they're going right out of here, making sure they have their coverage on to meet their needs.
I think that kind of says it all. Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Very good.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the closing market report on this Monday afternoon. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with the Ag News for the day.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Total Grain Marketing in Effingham, presenting a Market Outlook meeting with David Hightower of the Hightower Report on Wednesday, February 1st at 6:30 p.m. at the Days Inn in Mattoon. David has been featured on CNN, Bloomberg Television, The Wall Street Journal, and many other industry publications.
In agricultural news, Senate Budget Chairman Kent Conrad is drafting a measure under which farmers would have a 90% crop revenue guarantee for their individual operations. The program would replace the average crop revenue election program and direct payments. The program is designed to build on the key component of the Farm Safety Net crop insurance by addressing shallow farm level losses that are typically not covered by the insurance program. Conrad presented the proposal to North Dakota farm leaders last week. Under Conrad's proposal, farmers would be required to purchase a minimum catastrophic level of coverage or participate in the non-insured crop disaster assistance program to be eligible to participate in what the senator is calling the Crop Revenue Guarantee Program. Depending on how much crop insurance a farmer takes out, the program would cover between 75% and 90% of historic revenue. The CME Group said on Friday it would delay the launch of 8 new grain and oilseeds swaps following a request by the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. The swaps were set to be launched on February 13th. The new products were to include calendar swaps on soy meal, soy oil, and the soybean board crush, and bullet swaps on corn, wheat, soybeans, soy meal, and soy oil. Swaps are private over-the-counter agreements between traders to exchange financial obligations. Ohio ethanol makers have rejected corn from that state containing vomitoxin. Vomitoxin, which sickens livestock if consumed in large amounts, thrived under cool, wet weather this past autumn in Ohio. Poet is accepting corn up to 7 parts per million vomitoxin with no discounts, and rejecting corn with 7.1 parts per million or higher. The Obama administration says new rules to manage nearly 200 million acres of national forests will protect watersheds and wildlife while promoting uses ranging from recreation to logging. The new rules, to replace guidelines thrown out by a federal court in 2009, are set to take effect in early March. The rules reflect more than 300,000 comments received since a draft plan was released last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. Up next, we'll hear a conversation I had just this morning with Scott Irwin, ag economist at the U of I. I asked him about cash basis and the article he had written and penned with ag economist Daryl Good about the marketplace just last week. You can find it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. First question was simply to have him summarize the event. Here's Scott Irwin.
Well, basically, as is pretty well known in among farmers and others, the basis for corn has been unusually strong starting during the harvest period last fall, and has not only remained strong, it's continued to get stronger. We're actually in South Central Illinois at positive basis levels recently, which is, at least in terms of the kind of records we have, which goes back almost 40 years, is a record.
Why? Why do you think that's happened?
Well, I think it's useful to think about what the job of basis is to begin with, to try to unpack that question. And in simple terms, the job of the basis is to make sure that the right amount of grain gets stored through the marketing year so that we, A, don't run out at the end of the year, or B, that we have enough to get us through until the next harvest. That's the job of the basis, to give us those storage signals. And when basis is really wide, that's the basis telling people that own commodities like corn that you should be storing it for later use. And when it's tight, it's sending a signal that we've got a situation where we need to pull supplies out of storage. And from that perspective, then right now the market seems to be sending a signal that not enough grain is moving out of storage into consumers' hands.
Is it that farmers have built a great deal of storage over the last 2.5 to 3 years and are tight holders of corn that's causing the problem?
I think it's important to separate those two, Todd, that it's clear that an enormous amount of storage has been built, but this is not an issue of capacity. Because there's plenty of capacity, and right now we know there's plenty of stocks. We probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 billion bushels around someplace. And so it's a question about why isn't it coming to market as fast as we need it. That can either be farmers are very tight holders, and there's probably some evidence that that is going on. Farmers are in generally a pretty liquid, strong financial position, and they can maybe afford to be tighter holders than they have in the past. And on the other hand, we could continue to be surprised about the strength of demand as we've gone through the marketing year as well.
And where would that surprise come? Exports, ethanol, feed usage?
We have had some surprise on exports just very recently, but that doesn't explain what's been happening since fall. The big question marks are around feed demand and the data that we use to benchmark that feed demand that comes from the USDA through our grain stocks reports.
Too small?
That is one logical explanation for what's been happening. If our stocks reports have been indicating larger stocks and smaller feed use than is really the case, that the stocks are smaller and therefore feed use has been larger, then that could be part of the explanation.
Is there a way that we will know that eventually? Will it come out in the wash someplace or not?
It has in the past, and we can be hopeful that the USDA grain stocks reports do become better calibrated with livestock numbers as we go through this marketing year and next year. So we would hope that that would be the case, but we've had enough three consecutive quarters where the numbers seem to be too large relative to animal numbers that there is some uncertainty about how quickly this could get reconciled.
In the past, when it's been corrected, how did USDA manage that statistically? What happened to give them the corrections? Do you know?
I don't know the insides. I don't think that they manage it in any way, but the sampling errors have tended to cancel out across quarters so that by the time you get to the end of the marketing year, the final stocks number for a marketing year generally has made sense relative to animal numbers. And that's the real problem this year, is that the final number for the 2010-11 corn marketing year seemed too large relative to the number of animals that we have pretty good data are sitting in feedlots and hog barns and so on.
But it's the last one for the year. It's unlikely that they will go back and change the last one, right? For the marketing year.
Unlikely that they would do so until we get the ag census. They can go back and make corrections if they feel like that they have adequate data to do so. But at this point, I don't know where they would get that data.
Right. So going forward, what does it tell you about the September grain stocks report for the coming year, for this year? Anything? Nothing?
I wouldn't. I would hesitate to say one way or the other. There have been such big surprises. Right now, based on previous history, I mean, the grain stocks is indicating a implied feed and residual use that gives you an amount of grain fed per animal that is just really low. And it doesn't
by how much in total low? A couple hundred million bushels? More than that?
A couple hundred million bushels, yes, at least.
200, 250?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of bushels.
Well, again, it's
25 cents or 30 cents.
That's right. And what is the basis? Seems to be about 25 to 30 cents higher than normal.
So despite the fact that the futures markets may be underpriced based on USDA numbers, the cash markets have evaluated it differently.
Well, the cash markets are where actual commercial transactions between buyers and sellers are going on all the time, and there's clearly been upward pressure on cash prices, probably due to some combination of tight producer holding of available stocks and some underestimation of feed use in recent months.
Let me ask a different question. And I thought about this just a bit, wondering whether the exodus of cattle from Texas and the Southwest that may not have gone into the 1,000 head or above feedlots would make a difference, and whether marketing poultry, chickens, at a pound less, smaller than they have been, would make a difference. Because neither will have showed up, I don't think, completely in the grain stocks figures in the feed and residual usage, and I may very well be wrong about this, because you would have to have a full year for the poultry to come in, because there would be an addition. I'm making the assumption that the coops would be kept full, but you wouldn't get that until the last one, until the last set filled back in. And I don't know whether that would mean that usage would be slowed or not. I'm not quite certain about that, but animal units would be different at that point. And you may have different animal units for the cattle as well.
And there's always the possibility of some kind of random error creeping into the USDA series on grain-consuming animal units. But those are based on reports and reported inventories that at least I haven't heard of any issues in terms of that causing a bias one direction or the other. I mean, I think that probably could happen, but I haven't heard any discussion that that's a major issue.
The final question then is, how should a producer take advantage or see the cash basis? Should they simply see it as this overage is calling for corn and I should reward the marketplace?
Again, given the tremendous uncertainties, I think that a prudent approach would be to probably reward the market with some of what it is screaming for right now. But at the same time, recognizing that if in fact there has been a data problem that has led to futures being, modestly undervalued, I wouldn't want to sell everything right now either.
That's Scott Irwin, ag economist at the University of Illinois. You can find the article we were discussing online at the Farm Doc Daily website. It was written by he and ag economist Daryl Good. Visit farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley@admworld.com.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Lisa Jones of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County on the phone line to take up the cash grain market. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Todd.
Basis has been really strong. Do you still have overs there at your elevator?
We do. We're still posted 10 over for January. We'll move to 11 over for February and then follow through 12 over for March.
How's that compared to the recent days? Is it backed off or not?
We're about as strong as we closed. We moved up from a nickel where we were posted about 14 days ago. With elevators in the countryside being posted free DP, I don't know that we're buying any more cash bushels than where we are actually getting in bushels that just are going to sit on DP.
And what reason do you suppose we have such a strong basis?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with basis levels at the Gulf. I mean, we continue to hear numbers that are traded higher over there. I know the end of last week we heard that there was a 32 over number paid in Decatur. And I think at this point guys are just trying to get the grain to continue to move. I mean, with the weather being as nice as it was, we saw a lot of grain movement there 1st of December, and I think we're just trying to get some continued follow-through from that.
Very quickly, will it continue at the strong basis, that is, and what are your bids?
I think we'll see the basis continue as strong as we're at for at least the short term until we figure out what is actually going to move and what's actually out there. That pushed cash corn into Champaign at 642, fall corn at 535, cash beans are 1171, and fall beans are 1164.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
Thanks, Todd.
Lisa Jones with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. We'll say goodbye to some of our stations now. For the rest of you, back in 2 minutes with the weather.
It's National Croissant Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1516, Duke Wilhelm IV of Bavaria instituted what was probably the world's first consumer protection law. It established purity standards on German beer. Before a committee consisting of gentry and knights, he ruled that only barley, hops, and water could be used in brewing beer. The regulation remained in effect until 1986, more than four centuries later. In 1744, Azeel Wilkinson was born, an American blacksmith. He was among the first to use water power to manufacture farm tools, domestic utensils, and cut nails. In 1888, Asa Gray died, a leading American botanist of his time and a supporter of Charles Darwin. He co-authored Flora of North America with John Torrey. And in 1948, Orville Wright died. He, along with his brother Wilbur, invented the first powered airplane. 5 years after that first 12-second flight, they were producing the Model A, capable of flight for over 2 hours. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. On the phone line with us, John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, John.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
What a beautiful day it is here in the Midwest, but let's start in South America. They've had some rough times. Is it getting any better in Argentina?
It is. In Argentina, they've gotten back into more of a normal type of rainfall pattern. Their temperatures have dropped, and no longer are they having any kind of stressful heat. And we really think that the detrimental window of weather that you had much of December and the early portion of this month, we think that that window is now closed, and we see favorable conditions really from this point on.
When you talk about detrimental, how much of an impact do you suppose it might have had? Do you have an estimate at all?
Well, we don't do estimates, but certainly from a crop standpoint and a crop cycle standpoint, corn, with the timing of that, is always going to be hurt more than, let's say, soybeans.
Uh-huh.
And so certainly the impact and the response to what happened here, you know, in December and early January would have a much bigger response on corn than it would on soybeans.
If you move further north into Brazil, are they faring better too?
They are. Yeah, they are. Things are improving in Brazil, and you know they've had some detrimental weather across Brazil, but they too are getting back into a normal type of a pattern across most areas. Certainly, there were some dry conditions that had evolved across far southern sections of Brazil, but now they're seeing more frequent rains. No sign of any kind of extended heat coming into the region, so their conditions also are in a beneficial mode. And certainly, the problematic weather is done for a while.
Let's look into North America. Southwest and Southeast have cupped ourselves in the Middle West with dry areas, and we have a dry area actually into the northwestern corner of the Midwest. What does it set up and portend? Anything or nothing?
Well, it's January, and so at this stage of the game, the correlation between dryness right now in January and anything that would happen in the spring and summer, there isn't one. So it's something to watch here coming up and some of the below-normal precip anomalies that we've tended to have. The one thing it does portend, which we've had problems with the last couple of years, is we don't expect any kind of flooding up across the Dakotas and the Red River Valley. That's been a major problem over the last couple of years, and that certainly doesn't look like it's going to be the case this year.
And then just very quickly, right here in our part of the world in the Illinois, Iowa, Indiana area, the eastern part of Iowa, that is. Not a lot of snowfall.
No.
But we've been able to soak most of the rainfall in. Is that good enough to get us started for soil moisture in the coming year, you think? Are we on track or not on track?
Well, I think at the present time, things look, you know, are fine. And a lot of it has to do with that lack of any kind of permafrost. In other words, all the moisture pretty much went into the soil here lately. And again, it really comes down to what will be happening over the next, you know, 4 or 6 weeks and versus, let's say, what happens in January.
And any place else around the northern hemisphere that we need to check in on before I let you go?
Very cold weather has gone into Eastern Europe and portions of the Ukraine and Russia. And so that does need to be watched for possible winter kill problems for winter wheat.
Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Todd.
That's John Davis. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back here again tomorrow afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.